Go Hitlery. Good morning to you. Kelly O'Connell here, and we've got the first ever female candidate for the United States presidency, Hitlery Clinton. And, well, you know, it's just one of those things. You just can't, look a gift horse in the mouth. But she's in there, folks, and there's no... really no going back now, but there was a lot of interesting things that went on yesterday, and we had some pretty good rain last night, so let me get over to that to my little source for local weather and see how many inches that we got there. How much it says right here that it was the highest rate would have been at the average of 1.23 inches an hour at 2:31 a.m., which I actually woke up and listened to the rain when it came down around then. So we got about a quarter of an inch and about half of an inch in the storm total. And now the July total, 0.63, the storm total, 0.51. So it was a good little bit of rain to get. And I'm looking at the radar, and it looks like just some more coverage. There'll be some more coverage. But it looks to me like it's going to be clearing up. But what do I know? And some of your other... headline, Sanders loyalists bash Hillary nomination, clash with police. The fury is getting stronger for them, and the shock is starting to sink in. They had a candidate. They fell into love with the candidate. The candidate was beautiful. The candidate was everything that they wanted their nominee to be, and then it ended, and the candidate nobly gave homage and asked to back the other person who's now the nominee. And then it comes out that the candidate, this beautiful socialist utopian candidate, could have made it, folks, except for Hitlery and her stupid rules and the sneaking and lying and cheating. So people are mad. The people in the Sanders camp are unhappy. Rachel Maddow listened to Bill Clinton's speech and said, I found the top part of the beginning of the speech, Clinton's speech, shocking and rude. Well, it wouldn't be a Bill Clinton undertaking if it wasn't shocking and rude. Would it? Would it, friends? And white people were ordered to the back of a black crowd at this nomination, at this convention. So, well, why don't we do a little bit of listening to this convention here, this Democratic convention, which has had some bizarre moments. Certainly has. But here is, I think I've got something from Hillary herself, from the Hildebeest, from the monster, half female, half male. 100% weird. Hillary Clinton. Here's Hillary Clinton shattering the glass ceiling of male presidents in convention video appearance. She didn't even show up. I guess she was too weak from coughing and laid in bed all night. But here it is. Breaking that glass ceiling. Come on, y'all. Hillary on Jumbotron. Hillary on Jumbotron.
Yeah. Philadelphia. I am so happy. It's been a great day and night. What an incredible honor that you have given me. And I can't believe we just put the biggest crack in that glass ceiling yet. Thanks to you and to everyone who's fought so hard to make this possible. This is really your victory. This is really your night. And if there are any little girls out there who stayed up late to watch, let me just say, I may become the first woman president, but one of you is next. Thank you all. I can't wait to join you.
Oh, gross. Disgusting. Nancy Pelosi said, whatever you do, don't or stop telling people to vote for me, Hillary, because you're a woman, because it just doesn't cut it. Nobody wants to be told to vote for somebody because they're a certain gender or a certain race. So I would have to agree with that. And all right, so I've got Bob Jessica coming at 7, so we can't diddle-daddle here around. We've got to get into our Bill Clinton speech that was so offensive to so many, I guess. I thought it was a pretty good speech. Do you want to hear the first part of it where he talks about, I don't want to get into the first part of it because first part of it just goes over his grandpa's going to his grandpa's store and hanging out with people, which I'm sure is all accurate. You know, he did hang out. He did get to know people. What he said that I found to be somewhat suspicious was that when he was a little kid, he realized the best way to help people is to get elected into office. I'm like, really? So a 5-year-old kid says that?
42nd President of the United States, Bill Clinton.
Sounds like the start of Ain't No Stopping Us Now, you know? Little Bill Clinton for y'all. So anyway, Bill Clinton gets this speech, and they say that they're saying that at least Matt Cow was saying that it was not feminist. It was not a feminist speech. I guess if it's not a feminist speech, it ain't nothing. But it was rude. It was crude. It also said, and I got to tell you, totally contrived how he met her. And the notes that I made to myself were, Bill fell in love with a girl he couldn't commit to, he doesn't sleep with or live with, or obviously romantically love. He doesn't live with her. He's got his own woman, but he's going to stand up and talk about falling in love with Hillary. And what an incredible, you know, if he loves her, everybody else should love her, except he doesn't love her. It must be like hanging out with your sister or something, you know? Anyway, here we go.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. In the spring of 1971, I met a girl. The first time I saw her, we were, appropriately enough, in a class on political and civil rights. She had thick blonde hair, big glasses, wore no makeup, and she exuded this sense of strength and self-possession that I found magnetic. After the class, I followed her out, intending to introduce myself. I got close enough to touch her back, but I couldn't do it. Somehow I knew this would not be just another tap on the shoulder, that I might be starting something I couldn't stop. I saw her several more times in the next few days, but I still didn't speak to her. Then one night, I was in the law library talking to a classmate who wanted me to join the Yale Law Journal. He said it would guarantee me a job in a big firm or a clerkship with a federal judge. I really wasn't interested. I just wanted to go home to Arkansas. Then I saw the girl again, standing at the opposite end of that long room. Finally, she was staring back at me. So I watched her. She closed her book, put it down, and started walking toward me. She walked the whole length of the library, came up to me and said, "Look, if you're going to keep staring at me," and now I'm staring back, "we at least ought to know each other's name. I'm Hillary Rodham. Who are you?" I was so impressed and surprised that, whether you believe it or not, momentarily I was speechless. Finally, I sort of blurted out my name, and we exchanged a few words, and then she went away. Well, I didn't join the law review, but I did leave that library with a whole new goal in mind.
We'll have to come back and hear about this unwholesome goal in a few minutes, dear friends. Helen Reddy's got a dedication to Hillary right here. And I'm sure you know what it is already. And so 619, 620, first female. I mean, 619 on the button. 523-1450, and I don't have the text machine with me, but you know, what does it say that the best thing, your best argument for vote for me, this is my gender, you know? All right, we'll take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm delighted you're here with me this morning. We're going to have Bob Jessica on from the Gospel Rescue Mission at 7. So we're squeezing all this stuff in here. It's going to be great. Be right back.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. But if we will fall to pain, if I pay the price, but look how much I gain. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong.
All right, so the fact that George Will, who is another political writer who hates Trump's guts and wants to see him fall into a wood chipper, Trump says, and George Will says he doesn't want to release his taxes because there's a bunch of work that he's done with the Russians, which how would George Will know? although George Will is a smart guy, but I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to say. And Trump says, I don't really do business with the Russians. So, anyway, they say that there is more stuff coming out about Hillary, and Julian Assange doesn't like Hillary. Of course, nobody really likes Hillary, do they? Even Bill can't stand her, doesn't live with her, and has an affair with somebody that they call the Energizer Bunny for some strange reason. She must keep going and going and going, but where is she going? All right, so here is Rachel Madcow, who suffers from mad cow disease. Here's her take on Bill Clinton's speech.
A plus for the end of the speech.
All right, let me adjust the sound on this. I'm telling you, the sound on these clips coming out of the convention is just horrific. Check it out. Here, hold on a second here. Here's Mad Cow with the once mighty, what's the guy's name that got caught lying? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Brian Williams.
A plus for the end of the speech. I think the beginning of the speech was a controversial way to start, honestly. Talking, you know, a girl leading with this long story about him being attracted to an unnamed girl and thinking about whether he was starting something he couldn't finish, building her whole political story for the whole first half of the speech around her marriage to him. I think, you know, lest there were worries that this was going to be too feminist a convention, that was not a feminist way to start. But the end of the speech was really good. I got to say that the top of the speech I found shocking and rude.
Shocking and rude. Well, I mean, it sounded more like stalking and rude to me. Cause you know, I don't know exactly what he said, says typically to these women other than you want to come over to my place, but all right, here is some more of the speech from Bill Clinton, our former president, who is forced into the position of supporting his wife, even though she is a used up robot hag. She's a sea hag. Check it out.
A couple days later, I saw her again. I remember she was wearing a long, white, flowery skirt. And I went up to her and she said she was going to register for classes for the next term. I said I'd go too. And we stood in line and talked. You had to do that to register back then. And I thought I was doing pretty well. Till we got to the front of the line and the registrar looked up and said, Bill, what are you doing here? You registered this morning. I turned red and she laughed, that big laugh of hers. And I thought, well, heck, since my cover's been blown, I just went ahead and asked her to take a walk down to the art museum. We've been walking and talking and laughing together ever since. And
even though they don't live together and don't sleep together, and he's got a new girlfriend who's actually attractive, if you're someone as persuasive and charming and witty and ambitious as Bill Clinton, why would he have had to marry her to make it? That's the part that has never made any sense. It's like, she's gay, he's a sex addict, let's make this work, baby. That's how it seems from the outside, folks. Pardon my being totally upfront with you.
We've done it in good times and bad, through joy and heartbreak. We cried together this morning on the news that our good friend and a lot of your good friend, Mark Weiner, passed away early this morning. We built up a lifetime of memories. After the first month and that first walk, I actually drove her home to Park Ridge, Illinois, to meet her family and see the town where she grew up. A perfect example of post-World War II middle-class America. Street after street of nice houses, great schools, good parks, a big public swimming pool, and almost all white. I really liked her family. Her crusty conservative father, her rambunctious brothers, all extolling the virtues of rooting for the Bears and the Cubs. And for the people from Illinois here, they even told me what waiting for next year meant. Could be next year, guys.
There is some talk that Bill Clinton is sick or he's had a stroke or something, but, you know, I don't, looking at him, he doesn't look to me like he's had a stroke. He looks like he's, you know, fairly old, but he's got a very much a dry mouth, and I kind of wonder, you know, he's had some heart problems. I wonder if the dry mouth is associated with any of the medication that he takes or... All right, anyway, Hillary's Day. Don't rain on Hillary's parade. 6:30, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523, 1450, if you have a comment on our Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton. She's, I can honestly say, one of a kind. Thank God. We'll be right back.
Not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul.
All right, so you're wondering what the protesters are saying about Hillary. Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. Let's listen to a little bit of this right here. These are people that you can say are Bernie voters, and they hate Hillary. And this first lady is epic. She is in a class by herself. She starts and ends the video. Check this out.
My message is to Hillary Clinton, drop out. You have made a mock.
My message is to Hillary Clinton, drop out.
My message is to Hillary Clinton, drop out. You have made a mockery of our democracy.
She's not a progressive candidate, and I don't intend to vote for her in November. I'll be voting for Jill Stein if the Democratic establishment has their way and proceeds with the coronation of Hillary, despite the will of the people being behind Bernie Sanders.
How would you describe Hillary in your own words?
I think I'll go with Donald Trump's on this one. She's crooked.
She's part of the Clinton crime family, and then she needs to be put in prison right away. What her and Debbie Wasserman Schultz did to all of the voters in this country is unfathomable that they haven't put her in jail yet.
Hillary Clinton's followers have no problem, and they have denied election fraud.
Hillary Clinton is in a syndicate that is controlling or attempting to control all of our government, and no one seems to care about it. I care. I'm outraged. I want to defend my right to vote. I don't want government corruption.
She's the picture of corruption.
I mean, you're probably about the one person I've interviewed today.
Well, I mean, she's been corrupt since 92?
Yeah.
When Bill was elected? And now it's just getting that much worse. I mean, she made, what, $21 million from speaking to different banks and Wall Streeters?
Yeah. Well, do you think a lot of those, speaking fees were kicked back from the deals?
I think anyone who doesn't is naive.
Now, listen, Hillary Clinton, I didn't vote for you in 08. I voted for Obama because he wasn't you. You know what? You're a liar. You're a cheat. We don't raise our children to act this way. And you're going to further it. You got superdelegates that you bought before the election. I'm in Michigan, Hillary. We uncrowned you, you fracking queen. And I'm going to tell you what. All your superdelegates that are standing behind you in Michigan, the finger isn't on them when it comes August and November to vote. We're voting you out. We're going for a new Congress. You don't win anything because we're not going away. Our job is just beginning. And our job is to shut you down. F you, Hillary Clinton.
And all day I've noticed the disconnect between Bernie supporters and Hillary Clinton. I've interviewed probably nearly a dozen people so far at several different protests. I had not one of them told me they were going to vote for Hillary.
No, no. I haven't found, the only Hillary supporters I've found here is CNN. CNN, and that, I probably should say that, that's kind of mean, actually. But I haven't run into any Hillary supporters either.
What do you think about Hillary Clinton's support for TPP?
I think it's phony. Basically, she called it the Goldwater trade agreement. Now it's going to campaign. She flip-flopped to try to keep up with Bernie Sanders. She'll pass it. They're going to try to pass it through after November between her and then. If they don't pass it then, I'm sure she's going to make a good excuse to pass it. I don't trust her. I'm not voting for her. Simple as that. I'm not voting for a corporation.
Hillary cheats. Now, the last couple of weeks, she's not up in double digits against Trump. She's into 2 or 4 points.
Or losing.
She is losing in swing states, which has not happened in decades.
They'll support Jill Stein. Some of them might go to Gary Johnson. Some might go to Stein. But I would say 80% of them are not voting for Hillary.
If they want to anoint that little effing whatever she is, we're going to lose to Trump. And it's on them. The games that they played and what they have done to us. Good luck in November. You don't have our vote. You don't have our money. And Trump's going to flatten you like a pancake, Hillary.
Hillary, you're going to be flattened by like a pancake by Trump. All right. That may be shocking for you Hillary supporters out there that may be legion. Let's take a break and get you some weather here. Kelly O'Connell, 6:39. We got Bob Jessica coming from the Gospel Rescue Mission to bring a little light into this heat. 6:39, 6:40 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450. Kelly O'Connell will be right back. It's 6:42. It's 6:42, and you know what? Hillary is not part of the status quo. She's not part of the elite. Here's Bill Clinton to explain that one. She was nominated as the nominee. She was chosen last night. She smashed the glass ceiling. What an accomplishment! All right, check this out.
This is a really important point. This is a really important point for you to take out of this convention. If you believe in making change from the bottom up, if you believe the measure of change is how many people's lives are better, you know it's hard and some people think it's boring. Speeches like this are fun. Actually doing the work is hard. So people say, well, we need to change. She's been around a long time. She sure has. And she's sure been worth every single year she's put into making people's lives better. I can tell you this. If you were sitting where I'm sitting, and you heard what I have heard at every dinner conversation, every lunch conversation, on every long walk, you would say, this woman has never been satisfied with the status quo in anything. She always wants to move the ball forward. That is just who she is.
I didn't know she was interested in those. All right, here's a little bit. Here's a little bit more for you. No, well, here's some Andy Cooper, Anderson Cooper, who is, you know what? He's part of the elite, isn't he? His mom is Gloria Vanderbilt. He must have looked good in school, huh? Anyway, here's an analysis. Are identity politics turning people off?
And their critique of Trump's economics.
And that's David Axelrod, rat face.
Does it how it might affect people? Do you think it turns off some of the viewers who are watching at home? I mean, sort of the identity politics, which is something
I think that for many, last Monday and Tuesday night were too harsh, and probably the Democrats in watching what happened in Cleveland wanted to dial that back. I'll say this, there's been a sea change in the arena. Those of us who were here in the afternoon, I think, would notice the signs have changed. The Bernie chants have dissipated. It seems like the measures undertaken to quell those concerns were successful.
Jeffrey Lord, what do you...
Well, I must say, I found it amusing that Al Franken thinks that a businessman is not qualified to be president of the United States, but a comedian from Saturday Night Live is qualified to be a United States senator from Minnesota. I really do think that, you know, the political class is having a hard time with this for reasons that have nothing necessarily to do with ideology.
It is interesting when you juxtapose this to the Republican convention, because, I mean, speaker after speaker, that convention was talking about, you know, we are all Americans and sort of decrying the idea of identity politics, which you also decry.
Right. I mean, that is the difference. And Ben and I have had this discussion on one occasion. There is a difference here. Are we going to keep dividing people by race all of the time instead of treating everybody as Americans?
All right, folks, are we going to keep dividing people by their race, by their gender, by their... I don't know what race or gender Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, because she kind of had a, I mean, didn't she have kind of a Medusa goat face because her eyes are on the side of her head? But anyway, not to be uncharitable in her time of suffering, let's take another break here. I have more Bill Clinton for you. And you want me to play that first? Okay, since you kindly asked, here we go. More Bill Clinton.
Live the long, full, blessed life. It really took off when I met and fell in love with that girl in the spring of 1971. When I was president, I worked hard to give you more peace and shared prosperity, to give you an America where nobody is invisible or counted out. But for this time, Hillary is uniquely qualified to seize the opportunities and reduce the risk we face. And she is still the best darn change maker I have ever known. If you love this country, you're working hard, you're paying taxes, and you're obeying the law, and you'd like to become a citizen, you should choose immigration reform over somebody that wants to send you back. If you're a Muslim and you love America and freedom and you hate terror, stay here and help us win and make the future together. We want you. If you're a young African American, disillusioned and afraid, we saw in Dallas how great our police officers can be. Help us build a future where nobody's afraid to walk outside, including the people that wear blue to protect our future. Hillary will make us stronger together. You know it, because you spent a lifetime doing it. I hope you'll do it. I hope you'll elect her.
You hear
those of us who have more yesterday.
You hear the desperation in his voice to get her out of the house. Well, they don't actually live together, but
days and tomorrow tend to care more about our children and grandchildren. The reason you should elect her is that in the greatest country on earth, we have always been about tomorrow. Your children and grandchildren will bless you forever if you do. God bless you. Thank you.
I actually think your grandchildren and children will rise up in hatred if you elect her. But she's like a spent force, isn't she? I mean, isn't she like one of these people they're testing to see if they can make them live forever? And they're switching out body parts as fast as they can. Anyway, Helen Reddy, I Am Woman, a salute. And, you know, did you hear that Bill, the gay evangelist McCamley, is bringing a new title on it to his resume? It's Grim Reaper. Boy, he's in favor of everything that's good for society. Speaking of which, we'll be right back to talk more Hillary.
I am woman, watch me grow. See me standing toe to toe as I spread my loving arms across the land. But I'm still an embryo with a long.
They say that Bill Clinton's speech was very successful, and I'll just have to take the expert's opinion. I mean, for me, he's like a vegetarian going over to the local steakhouse and talking about his favorite cut of meat. He fell in love with her. He went up and touched her on the shoulder. She was going to change his life. He goes into the story of the three different times he asked her to marry him, and yet she's not good enough to live with, and she's not good enough to sleep with, and he's got another girlfriend. So what exactly is it that they share besides ambition? Anyway, shifting gears, and we're going to have Bob Jeska on the next hour to talk about the gospel rescue mission. I'm squeezing in as much as I can here, as much life as possible in the first hour. Here is Trump's gotten favorable coverage, anything's possible, Obama, Russian involvement on the hack, et cetera. Check this out. Our dear president's going to go down like he's like going down like a drowning man. You know, he's just getting he realizes he's not going to really exist after he leaves the Oval Office. So here we go.
It was 12 years ago tomorrow that much of the nation first heard the name Barack Obama when the then Illinois state senator gave his now famous keynote address at the 2004 convention. As he prepares to address this convention tomorrow, he's sitting down for an exclusive interview with Savannah Guthrie. And among the topics discussed is the controversy swirling here over leaked emails showing the DNC appearing to favor Hillary Clinton. And the question, were the Russians behind the hack?
Do you believe the Russians are, number one, behind that hack and the release, and that they're actually trying to interfere with the U.S. political election?
Well, I think the FBI is still investigating what happened. I know that experts have attributed this to the Russians. What we do know is that the Russians hack our systems, not just government systems, but private systems. But, what the motives were in terms of the leaks, all that, I can't say directly. What I do know is that Donald Trump has repeatedly expressed admiration for Vladimir Putin.
Sounds like you're suggesting that Putin might be motivated to prefer Trump in the White House.
Well, I am basing this on what Mr. Trump himself has said, and I think that Trump's gotten pretty favorable coverage back in Russia.
Is it possible in your mind that the Russians would try to influence the U.S. election?
Anything's possible.
Much more of Savannah's exclusive interview with the president tomorrow morning.
Who cares? All right, so anyway, in case you're wondering, Silver came out with a guy that was to handicap the race and basically got every single number right, is saying that if the election was held today, and this is a couple of days ago, I think it was on Monday, if the election was held on Monday, Trump's chances would be 56.5%, so 57% of chance of winning. Now, what does Trump have behind him? He's got a favorable win behind him. People want change. He's unafraid of PC. He had Cruz try to push him off the stage, and it backfired on Cruz. All you lovers of Cruz, I just want to know, is he still God's anointed? Did God want him to get up on the stage and throw a giant tantrum? I'm just curious. Maybe he's the greatest, most, you know, maybe he's more trained for the presidency than anybody since Tom Jefferson, but did God really call him to do that? In any event, Hillary's got a lot of bad stuff coming raining down on her. This report on the emails, Bill Clinton is, I don't know if he's an asset or not. I mean, he was an asset during that speech, but even during the speech, you got the feeling that he was talking about a colleague, not his wife, not his lover, not his, the love of his life. And Bill Clinton has had probably, I mean, he's had thousands and thousands of women, hasn't he? And hasn't he had thousands of women after he married Hillary? So she's an unloved woman. She's scorned. She is the sea, she is a grand sea hag. She's worn out. When she gets up and gives a speech, it turns into a hectoring, yelling match in which she seems to be shouting to save the entire world. She sounds like a truck driver just coming down from a meth binge. And, you know, her voice is like a terrible robot that's just gone rogue, and artificial intelligence is trying to wipe us out. And that can't be good when you're giving a speech. And she's, you know, her pantsuits, you know, they might be bulletproof, but, you know, come on. People are looking for more than just the first woman in history. I think people are scared. They see Trump as the only lifeline. And all right. So anyway, Kelly, we're going to 523-1450. I got Bob Jeske here to talk about the gospel rescue mission. And I'm going to ask him if a Medusa-haired goat face showed up in Las Cruces and needed a place to stay, would you bring her in? What we're going to find that out. 659 Kelly Collin, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Of course, talking about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's now jobless and probably homeless. We'll be right back. It's 7:06. Today is the 27th of 2016. It's, I mean, you know, I've got a little milestone here for you. Trump has jumped. Now, this does not normally happen, although when Debbie Goat Eyes got kicked out, it was not a good portent. The Romans would have been freaked out to see their this lady who bears a striking resemblance to mythological creatures to get thrown out of office. So anyway, Trump has jumped to a 7% lead during their convention. That bodes very poorly for Hillary. And I was talking to my guest saying I see a perfect storm building against Hillary. But let me ask you something. We've got Bob Jeske here at Gospel Rescue Mission. If a woman who looked like she had Medusa hair and goat eyes showed up and said, I need a place to stay, you'd give her a bed. You'd give her a bale of hay.
Kelly, you know, I asked for a nice segue after the scorched earth first hour of your program this morning, and you give me that. Yeah, I guess the answer would be yes. We don't turn anybody away from staying or eating at the mission.
Well, you know, there is something that people should bear in mind, that there's a lot of famous people and very accomplished individuals, some of them in music and the arts and literature and the movie industry, writers and all kinds of people, even politicians, who've been homeless.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. The age-old story of the actors, struggling actors, working as waiters and living out of their car for weeks and weeks and weeks. That's an old story.
Well, I mean, but the point is that you never know what the future holds for you, and no matter what security that you set up you've got in your life in terms of investments or family to back you up or whatever, that all can fall through.
Well, that's true, but it's also a story of America, where anybody can, with the right amount of effort, perseverance, and honing whatever skills God gave them, can make it in this country. And that's the beauty of America that so many appreciate.
I hear you. All right. So what is the mission of the gospel mission? What's your, you know, you think about this every day. This is what we have dedicated ourselves to. What are your,
our purpose is to provide an atmosphere, an environment, people who are dependent, who are addicted, who are down and out, can find an alternate life, a better life, by jettisoning the addictions that plague them and have led to the life of privation that they have. We deal with people on three levels. The physical, yeah, we give them food and a place to stay and clothes. That's the easy thing to do. The Las Cruces community is such a generous and charitable place that we very seldom want for that sort of contribution to pass on to the less fortunate. But the other two levels are much more difficult to reach, the mental.
So let me ask, though, it sounds like a lot of people, it is your impression or your knowledge that a lot of people who pass through the mission are dealing with substance abuse issues.
Probably yes, probably in the past, some
trauma then.
Oscillate back and forth, trying to get clean, trying to make the changes and fall back into that kind of life. It's a struggle for them.
But these are people, therefore, that are trauma survivors, a lot of them.
Yeah, probably. I'm not quite sure. I think that word is overused a bit nowadays. But yeah, many of them have lived lives of alcohol and drug abuse that have caused psychoses that are now debilitating in some way and prevent them from finding a job. But they're fundamentally good people, and many of them continue to struggle. And in a way, all of us do that. We're all struggling Christians. Struggling sinners, I should say, in their frame of reference, they're struggling with a more immediate physical demon. And I don't know how many that stay at the mission.
Well, I guess, anyway, the main thing is that people are showing up that desperately need help.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them don't know it. Some of them are showing up. They need a place to stay and something to eat, but they don't really realize that they are bereft of spiritual and moral underpinning, and that's what we offer as well. The spiritual, as I was saying, we believe in the restorative nature of work, which feeds and uplifts their spirit, gives them a sense of purpose. They're the kind of jobs that most people would consider menial, janitorial jobs, things that we need to run the mission, mowing the lawn, doing the cooking, doing the cleaning, running the front desk. But these are all jobs that give people who need it a purpose for living. And then the final and the most difficult component is the moral. And we accomplish that by providing chapel services and Bible studies, and Celebrate Recovery comes in. Jan Thomas from Messiah Park Community Church comes in on Fridays for 2 hours. And so those three levels, those three efforts in tandem, we think complement the entire effort. And that's our purpose.
All right. So let me ask you a question here. A lot of people believe that through recent events and through just the changes in society, that we're in a post-moral, you know, it's anybody can do what they want. Nobody else can criticize them. And we're in, you know, we've evolved beyond a lot of the personal morality issues that used to interest the ministers and the civic leaders and stuff. What's your response to that? How do these issues impact somebody in a homeless situation?
Yeah, I don't know if we're a post-moral country. It seems to me that there's much evidence of that. But then you find individuals every day that don't fit that mold. So it's hard to say. I do However, I do see much that is like the decline and fall of the Roman Empire by Gibbons. If you read the last third of that book, it's a long book and kind of hard to read.
It's not one book. It is.
No, it's two, but yeah. If you get the abridged version, it's one. You might as well be reading the front page headlines of our newspapers, the corruption, the graft, the immorality, and the perversity that is accepted, and not just accepted, but endorsed and pushed onto people.
Yeah.
That's what happened in the last hundred years of the Roman Empire.
Well, what you had is a family that came to power, a very brilliant and powerful family. And then after the leaders of that family, as so often happens in political dynasties, after the original leaders stepped aside or died or whatever, then they were replaced by increasingly insane and unethical leadership out of the Julio-Roman, this dynastic. You had people that were totally perverted and crazy that came in to try to lead Rome and really had no interest in leadership.
Right. You're talking about Nero and Caligula. These guys were only
That's
interested.
Out of the same family. There must have been some sort of a genetic pollution in there.
Oh, I don't know. But I see some of the same things happening in our country, and it's sad, and it's sadder yet. The kids coming through school nowadays don't have a clue that we are reliving history, like George Santayana said. If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it, and that's what we're doing today. I don't know where we are on the scale. You ask. If we're past the tipping point, who knows?
I mean, I think part of the question is, if you're living at a time when personal morality is, you know, to wherever you stand on the spectrum is said to be, it's your taste. You know, you can do pretty much anything that you want to. I mean, at this point, you're not supposed to molest kids, but we're killing kids through abortion. We're using abortion as a birth control.
And we're also permitting people from outside our country to colonize us and try to convince us that it's okay for old men to marry 9-year-old girls. It's okay to genitally mutilate women, to beat women, to stone homosexuals.
We're bringing in non-democratic actors in large numbers, people who don't understand democracy.
I don't think they're just non-democratic. I think they're primitive. They're not.
If you bring in a large number of people from, say, an Islamic faith, they don't have the theory of constitutionalism or human rights, let alone the nation state. That is not a concept that's getting a little bit far afield. But the point being that there is an article that came out this morning that said that the present administration is getting rid of all restraint in has a new program to bring in Central Americans and people across the border. So we're going to, whoever's the president is going to have their hands full. Although from what I understand, one of the parties wants to increase immigration by 500% and immediately enfranchise all of the people that are here. But be that as it may, there's a lot of issues that you deal with at the Gospel Rescue Mission that have in your opinion, or from your experience, a moral issue that the people that are there have to make certain moral decisions about their life, what the future is going to hold.
Sure. I mean, life is character.
Character is destiny, according to Heraclitus.
Ah, yes, yes, that's right. In fact, we mentioned that the last time I was on the show.
I'm disappointed you didn't write it down. Let's take a little break here. I've got Bob Jessica, a friend of mine. He runs the Gospel Mission. And he's a great guy. He's giving his life for his beliefs, and he's helping the most downtrodden members of society. 7:18 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back.
We did talk.
and we're here with Bob Jeska talking about the Gospel Rescue Mission and the just looking at the Julio-Claudian dynasty. Augustus supposedly, well, the start of it is Julius Caesar, of course, but his adopted son Augustus, according to some, led the greatest peacetime empire in the history of the world. I would think it's probably a little fictitious, since there were slaves and women had no rights, et cetera. Children didn't have any standing. But then there was Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero. You've got some of the worst leaders in history. So when you buy into the dynastic process, you take everything that involves, and you see it happen in the Kennedys, in the Bushes, in the Clintons. You have good with the bad. You have sometimes some of the worst people.
It seems so. I can't speak intelligently about the history to the detail that you've got there, but what is clear is that there's a certain morality and a certain strength of character that founds countries, that makes
the George Washingtons, the Thomas Jeffersons.
Exactly. Yeah. And the same with the Roman civilization. They were barbarians, but they were moral for their time, and they had a vision of creating a city. They succeeded, as did the Greeks in their time, but over time, the people lost the bubble, and I think we're losing the bubble here.
Clearly,
in many respects, I think we're under judgment as a country.
70% of the population thinks that we're on the wrong road. This is one. Headed in the wrong direction. This is one of the reasons that I think Trump he's an outsider, and people are sick of the individuals that got us to this point.
I think that it's becoming more and more clear to the people in the country that they need someone who knows how to manage something rather than a politician that's going to careen from one bad idea to another.
Well, I do think that people are sick of the demagoguery of someone getting up there and telling them you live in a bad country, you're a bad person. And there's, you know, I hate to say it, but at the DNC convention, there were no American flags the first night. I mean, that's to me is insane.
Didn't you think it was ironic that for a group of people who are so dead set against a wall, that they double walled themselves from the riffraff? From the podium was walled, and there was a 4-mile wall, double wall around the convention center to keep the rabid Bernie protesters away from the regular people.
Well, all of these individuals have personal walls. They all have bodyguards with guns. They're all opposed to guns. Their bodyguards carry a lot of weaponry. They live in houses that are heavily walled. So they don't, I mean, on a common sense self-survival level, they're all in favor of making the right choice. It's that when it gets to the highest level, we are sold on one crazy idea after another.
It's at the risk of, you know, getting into a field of psychoanalysis, these folks seem to be so delusional. Their hypocrisy, their conduct denies the beliefs that they say they have.
But it's on both sides.
Oh, that's true.
Paul Ryan is a globalist. I mean, you've got elites and globalists on both sides that are fighting to stay in power. Paul Ryan has a wall around his house, and a number of mothers of children that had been killed by illegals showed up at his house, and he got out of there as fast as he possibly could so there wouldn't be any sound bites. And he's right now lost between his personal favorability and the guy running against him. I think it's Rob Nalen.
Mm-hmm.
60 points has, you know, the other guy's come up 30 points and Ryan's dropped 30 points, and it's within a 10-point race.
You know, I'm not surprised. I think I've mentioned to you before that the Democrat Republican terms that we've used for well over 100 years, I don't think any longer apply. I think
you've got
a more accurate term is conservative and liberal, progressive and conservative.
But you've got these globalists
in both parties.
But Paul Ryan is a guy that, and these the things that these people stand for are so destructive of running a first-rate country, porous borders. And I would think that Paul Ryan and John Kerry agree we shouldn't have borders. I mean, even though Paul Ryan is running now on borders, he was either the idea behind the amnesties or he was the first person to sign up for it. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's I would agree. It's
you know what globalism is? It is the economic wing of the politically correct multiculturalism. I was thinking about this the other day. That's how they're going to convert the entire world onto this set of beliefs. You know,
well, isn't that how the EU started? With a great idea a long time ago. We're going to get together and form an economic bloc that will help us improve trade and. And before long, the statists took control and they were dictating internal policies, immigration, penal system, judicial.
Putting in moral as opposed to economics.
The Brits said, you know what? We're not going to do this.
And we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. Good morning to you. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. And what's on your mind?
Well, I woke up to your program and you're talking about these people and their walls. I made a call the other day when that lady was there who was running for office, and I asked her about border security and crime on the border, and she went off on kind of a wandering thing and ended up talking about the economic advantages of the open border.
Mary Lee Soles.
Talked about building bridges instead of walls.
Chuck.
And I never used the word wall.
Chuck.
Yeah.
Mary Lee Soles.
Yeah, okay. That was her name.
All right.
And I never used the word wall. She's the one that brought it up and started talking about building bridges instead of walls. And I'm going, I never said anything about a wall. I said border security. But she automatically brought up that word.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit knee-jerk in the party, isn't it?
Yeah, and It's just like the security thing is just like their attitude towards firearms. They have armed guards, but they're not going to give me any, but they don't want me to be able to protect myself.
Exactly.
It's I have a real trouble getting my head around where their heads are.
Well, I mean, there's this elitist vision, and we're going to be living in this. I don't like to use the New World Order term because it's freighted with so many cliches, but they're headed towards internationalism and at an extremely high rate of speed, and the Paul Ryans are along with it. They're all together. It's one party.
One thing I'm noticing here is that the people registered as Republicans have tendency to break away from the elites and the controllers in the party, whereas the Democrats they made a try with Mr. Sanders, but the party has clamped down, and the Democrats have not been able to break away from their ruling elite.
There is no independent thought allowed in the liberal or the Democratic wing. It's just simply not allowed because you've already got a group of people with different interests, different tribes joining together and to get all of their personal interests met. So, I mean, what does a radical pornographer have in common with a radical feminist? But they're both Democrats, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd bring up that comment about Mrs. Soles.
You got to have souls. What? Chuck, I said you got to have souls. I appreciate the call, Chuck. Thank you.
A pun this time of the morning.
I'm sorry.
Pretty hard to swallow.
Well, try to dissolve it in your coffee.
Okay.
Thanks, Chuck.
Day.
Have a great day. All right. Folks, we're here with a friend of mine. It is Bob Jessica, and he runs the Gospel Mission. We're going to come back. We're going to get rid of ancient Rome. We're going to talk about modern Las Cruces and helping people. And we got some events coming up. So be prepared to support the Gospel Rescue Mission. I spent about a year of my life studying ancient charity, and I came to the conclusion the only people that ever practiced charity were the ancient Jews and the Christians that came after him. That's where we get all of our charitable ideas from. So it is always the private sector that stands up and does the most work for people, because with government, you have a check or you have a house, whatever, you have free stuff. With a church group or a gospel rescue mission or something, you have ongoing relationships with people to kind of get them back on their feet. 732, 733 on the button. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. We'll be right back with Bob Jeska. Bob Jeska here, Bob Jeska with the Gospel Rescue Mission. So what are we doing, Bob? Give us some insight.
We've got a couple of events coming up, Kelly. The most immediate is a fundraiser that we've got in association with Texas Roadhouse from 4 to 10 p.m. on Monday, the 1st of August. We're inviting people to come out and eat. 10% of the food proceeds that Texas Roadhouse generates, they are giving to the Gospel Rescue Mission. So that's Monday, the 1st of August, 4 to 10 p.m., and come out and have a good steak at Texas Roadhouse and support the Gospel Rescue Mission. The second event that we've got coming up is an annual one that we've been doing for well over 25 years, specifically to help young children around the county. It's our back-to-school program. We give away new shoes, new socks, and new underwear to between 600 and 700 kids, and it'll help them start school on the right foot. From a philosophical standpoint, it would seem to make sense that if kids feel good about themselves in a school environment, they're more likely consider it a positive experience and stay in school. In contrast, if a kid has to come to school in rags, it's going to be a bad experience and they're going to drop out.
Where does this happen?
It happens at 1416 South Solano at our clothing room. We've got 50 to 75 volunteers that are going to be there that week to give out these new items, plus these young shoppers, so to speak, will be able to shop in our clothing room and pick out their school wardrobe. Three blouses or shirts, some bottoms, belts and purses as long as they last, and some school supplies for as long as
Bob,
they last.
This is a community where a quarter of the people are below the poverty line and another quarter are just above it. This community desperately needs this type of program.
Mm. Yeah, I wasn't aware of the statistics, but each year, We serve quite a few young children who are most likely getting the first new underwear that they've ever owned or the first new pair of shoes. Imagine they're coming from big families, hand-me-downs.
Nothing worse than hand-me-down underwear.
Yeah. So the back-to-school program is we need volunteers, we need donations, and if you're interested in helping, Wylene Saunders is at the clothing room from 9 to 11 and in most afternoons now to get signups for the back-to-school program. But if you want to contact Wylene for a volunteer opportunity, she's at 642-9619. That's Wylene Saunders at 642-9619. She's our clothing room manager, and she's run this every year for, 20 years.
That sounds fantastic. The contact info again?
It's Wylene Saunders, 642-9619. She's the clothing room manager.
Now, what's the smallest donation somebody can give?
Oh, there's no donation too small. None. Underwear come in packages. Socks come in packages. A pair of shoes. Used clothing. If you're an empty nester, or if your kids have grown up and grown out of their clothes, there are kids in this community that can use that, you know, that old clothing.
Don't throw it away.
Give it to us.
Where do you bring it, if physically?
You can bring it to the clothing room from 9 to 11, Monday through Friday.
Where is it at?
It's 1416 South Solano, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 to 11.
What's it close to?
Say again?
What is it close to?
It's across the street from the new Las Montañas School. It used to be the Church of the Rock on South Solano. Right next to our thrift shop. There's no donation too small. We also accept donations 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at our front desk at the Mission proper, which is at 1050 West Amador.
Yeah. And people who want to have the experience of joining the team and helping out, how do volunteers join the group?
Our front desk is always open. Call 523-7727 and tell the person that answers that you want to volunteer, and they'll make arrangements and somebody will get back to you.
Now, what if the person is an agnostic or an atheist?
Doesn't matter.
Believes in charity.
Doesn't matter.
All right.
It doesn't matter.
All right. We'll take a break here. I've got a little video for you on weather and then some local weather, and we'll be right back after that to continue on with the gospel rescue mission. And this is from, of course, the Weather Channel. Just got some very strong storms moving across the United States, and believe it or not, we've got flooding again coming into the Houston area.
On Tuesday, and more severe weather's on the way for the Central Plains. Now, we're looking at scattered storms throughout the week for a good chunk of the country, but we will see some isolated areas where you could get those stronger storms. And here's what we're looking at today and tonight. It's going to be along and ahead of this cold front that pushes to the south. So Nebraska, yeah, once again, you're going to be looking at some strong storms, possibility of hail and gusty winds, but notice all those scattered showers and thunderstorms sitting down to the south up into the Ohio Valley right through the overnight and into Thursday. Now, Thursday's threat, we're still looking at it through the plains, but notice all through the mid-Atlantic, we could see some scattered severe weather as well. And then on Friday, all those widespread storms to end the week that push all the way up into the Northeast.
It's about 70 degrees outside. It's about 70 degrees outside. And one of the things that I don't think was mentioned in the weather.com story, drenching storms going through Texas, totally covering Louisiana and Mississippi. And New Braunfels, which is a suburb outside of San Antonio, got 2.5 inches on Monday, and so we've got the risk of flooding through that whole area. But it is interesting, and rates of rainfall, because this is a slow storm, could be more than an inch an hour. But I mean, I've never seen anything like what Texas has gotten in the last year and a half. It's just been extraordinary, and there's more there coming. So anyway, we're here with Bob Jessica. And so, Bob, this time of the year represents what in the minds and the planning of the new the gospel rescue mission?
See, we're getting into the August timeframe, which is we are focused on the back to school program, and that project occurs about a week before school, and then we get into our fall season where we get prepped for our Thanksgiving and Christmas Meals on Wheels, where we provide meals for shut-ins around the county on behalf of the city whose kitchen is closed for those 2 days of the year. And we require about 150 volunteers that come in from the community to deliver those meals. So that's kind of what we are for the rest of the, you know, where we're going for the rest of the year. I would like to say, though, and give a thank you to a number of organizations that have helped us in our back to school. Dillard's gave us a bunch of hangers, and The Mary Marthas from one of the Methodist churches in town gave us a whole bunch of clothing, new clothes. First National Bank and the old Bank of the Rio Grande is putting together a clothing drive for us. So it's a community effort, but we could not do what we do without the individual interest of the community.
How many people will volunteer per week or month, do you think?
We have about 60 regular volunteers in the course of a month, and we surge.
There's, 100, 200,000 people in this community.
Well, last year we had just a little over 2,500 different people give us about 40,000 hours of their time. And that doesn't include the court-appointed people that are there on account of a judge sending them to us. So these are, in a very real sense, the Gospel Rescue Mission is the community's shelter.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many meals do you do a year, do you think?
Oh, gee whiz. It fluctuates. In 2015, I'm guessing about 81,000 meals, about 28,000 nights of lodging.
And you guys are not the community. I just to point out, you guys are not the Community of Hope.
No. The Community of Hope is across the street. A lot of people confuse us, but we're not. We're not affiliated at all.
Okay. All right. So, was there anything else that you wanted people to know? Or
no,
think?
I'd just like to thank our sponsors for the back to school program. Also, the NMSU football team has been helping us out by having players outside exhorting folks to come in and sign up.
Bouncers?
No. They've been holding up. They've been good guys. And I'd also like to thank the Texas Roadhouse for their help in our fundraiser this coming Monday, the 1st of August.
So get out to the Roadhouse
and
thank them for helping the local homeless population. Thanks for coming on, Bob.
Thank you, Ellie. It's always a pleasure. You are a community servant. I do appreciate what you do, not only in the mornings here at some god-awful time, but your pro bono work. You're a stalwart.
Oh, I appreciate that very much. All right, we'll have you back on soon. Folks, just getting done with the Gospel Rescue Mission. I'll take you out with a few little tidbits when we get back from our break. And we're listening right now to Herbie Hancock's Cantaloupe Island. I wanted to let you know that there's a report that's come out. The Mexican Border Agency is now said to be coordinating with illegals to be brought across the border. And certainly I would think that Obama is involved with that because he's hired a private security agency to take these people from the border and transport them across America to drop them off various places so they won't be in the justice system. Check this out.
Let's go.
We are going to build a great border wall to stop illegal immigration.
We will offer a very different vision. It's about building bridges, not walls, between people.
Is that true? Bridges and walls, two vastly different answers to a growing illegal immigration problem. But check out these bizarre images showing the extraordinary lengths people are going to get into the great United States of America undetected. So who is actually stopping them? Let's ask Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch. And we also know that the president today, to paraphrase, comes out and says the border has never been safer or more closed than ever before. He's been cracking down on the border. Hey, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Who's more accurate?
We don't have any border security. We don't have any enforcement of our immigration laws to any great extent. It's no surprise that people are taking such extraordinary steps to get across the border, because your real only chance of getting pushed back is if you're caught at the border. But once you're here, Interior enforcement, deportations generally have dropped dramatically over the last decade. I was looking at the numbers. This year, it looks like only 65,000 people who are here illegally will be deported. And that's out of a population of 12 million. And that works out, if my calculations are right, to about 0.5%. And only then are you going to be deported, generally speaking, as if you're a criminal. And we know that's not happening enough. So you get here, right. You get to the border, and you're free and clear, practically speaking. You have about as much chance of being deported as Hillary Clinton has of being indicted.
Tom, you know, it's such a lazy argument. It's such an insulting argument. No one's anti-Hispanic or pro-this or pro-that. It's just whether you're going to enforce the borders and have an immigration system. There's a way to get into the country legally. They are choosing illegal. And if you are against illegals coming into the country, you're being categorized as anti-Hispanic. For example, there were 39,000 caught at our southern border in 2015. Now, the president just says today, in an interview airing today, that it's never been safer and the border crossings have never been lower. Well, 45,000 were caught already this year, let alone the border guards who have come out and endorsed Donald Trump because they said they're not being supported.
They are, in addition to illegal immigrants. Imagine you see regular illegal immigrants going these extraordinary lengths. Imagine what the terrorists are doing on the border to get across. We already know they're working with the cartels there, and there's a major security risk there. So the president is whistling past the graveyard. He doesn't want to have to deal with the consequences of his, practically speaking, amnesty, because no one's being deported. As long as there's no enforcement once you get here, my gosh, they're going to come here in great numbers. And if we had stronger enforcement,
right,
wall or no wall, we'd have less border crossing.
And if they just secure the borders, they can get to most of the immigration reform, which we agree on. If we could just find some way to come to agreement on a way to get the border secured, then we can move forward with everything else, because it is too expensive and too hard just to become a citizen in this country, which is hurting us. The other stuff just won't be addressed because people are afraid of being labeled as anti-Hispanic or everything else.
You have to fix the lawlessness, Brian, before you can address, take any reasonable steps on any reform.
And I think what you just said is reasonable. Tom Fitton, thank you.
All right, so that is Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. And so anyway, think about if all of those people can get across and stay, how many drugs are coming across here? If the president is presenting this idea that the border is safe, and we used to try to intercede and have interdiction against drugs, that has to be thrown out of the window because the drugs are brought across the border by people. In the meantime, and there's a great new website, heatstreet.com, terror attacks occurring in Europe becoming a daily phenomenon, and they just beheaded that priest and in front of the congregants. And they want to make that here. They want people to get used to the idea that Islam is going to kill in the name of God until they get their way. And their way means that they run everything, because Sharia law does not allow any competition. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for listening in. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We want to thank Tom Jessica. Don't forget the Gospel Rescue Mission. Go do some charitable work down there. Have a great day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Ciao.